Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. From our workshops in Juneau, Alaska and London, England, we get together on the Echolink system to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
KL7R, KL7R, M0HBR. Are you there, Mike?
Yeah, M0HBR, KL7R. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, good evening. Good evening to you. Good morning from London. This must be Solder Smoke 39. It's 0645 hours GMT on Sunday, the 12th of November. And I understand that the that some solder smoke is being generated in Juneau. Is that right, Mike?
Well, yeah. Just as you called, I was applying power to my 10.140 transmitter that is made from a 240? Is that what it is? 74HC240 chip. And I used my KD1JV power supply, both of which I got working. And if I turn on the power supply, and I turn the rig to 10.140, that's the awful sound of a... actually, that's carrier. It's actually 10.141. On 10.141.17. So I'll have to adjust it, but... It's making the right kind of sound. I've got a 10140 crystal being flipped back and forth by a an inverter on the 74HC240, and so I'm working here. KL7R.
Wow, excellent, big progress there. Congratulations. Yeah, QRSS. I'm getting more interested in every time you talk about it. I am a big fan of beacon operations. It's fun to have a beacon going. I understand that we have to be careful about this term beacon because of some rather unclear regulations in some countries. I'm not sure which ones they are, but since we have such an international audience here, I'd like to point out that there's another term being used, MEPT, called the Manned Experimental Propagational Transmitter. The MEPT. I guess this is a beacon that's running when you're actually home, because I think the term beacon sometimes conjures up the notion, shocking though it might seem, that you just leave the thing on and let people respond to it. But if we use, I guess, the politically or legally correct term, the MEPT, well, it sounds like your MEPT or MEPT is going quite well there, Mike. Before we forget, I want to thank Dez M0AYF, who has provided us with lots of information about QRSS, and he's got a website here, and I printed this message out in draft mode, and the color is not coming through here, so I'm going to have to print it out again. But before the end of the show, we'll broadcast the website from Dez. He's provided some really good information on pickaxe and QRSS and all that kind of stuff, and I'm feeling the urge to transmit very slowly. KL7R M0HBR.
I've got the doc here, and it's Dez's site, and it's confusing because there's a Diz that I believe he's the fellow that does kits and parts, and he has toroids and what have you, and I've ordered from him a number of times, and so Dez and Diz, I got jammed up there, and that's part of why I couldn't remember his name there, but his website is www.qrss.vrsgb.net, like the David@PRSSRSPB.net is his place, and he asked that we mention his site. And he's been just full of all kinds of cool stuff. The pickaxe, I did a little more looking at that, and that's a pretty cool chip. If you, it's basically, like I said, it's got a basic interpreter on it and a bootloader. So the only thing you have to do to talk to it is a serial port ground, you know, transmit data and receive data, just rewire a connection and talk to it slow speed serial the interpreter loads it in and execute basic code. But what I found that was interesting, I haven't tried it yet, is that the software they use to code in BASIC and to load the bootloader also can save the BASIC programs as PIC assembly or a PIC hex file. So you can burn BASIC down onto a regular PIC using their software, and their software is free. So I might just try that. I've got a 16F88 chip, which is the same chip that they use in the pickaxe 18X. That's a whole lot of algorithms and a whole lot of jargon there, but it's pretty straightforward. I think that'll work. I'll have to try and see if I can burn that 16F88 using the pickaxe software. Otherwise, I'm going to order some pickaxes. I think a friend of mine at work is interested in it, and might do that. I'm sure I'm forgetting something here, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, my head is spinning in this digital soup here, like the digital alphabet soup. But it sounds fascinating, and one of these days I'm going to have to get into the worlds of PICs and microchip controllers and all that. I'm at the opposite end of the technology spectrum now. To show you how bad I am, when I think about putting my beacon transmitter back on the air, or my MEPT transmitter back on the air, and I built one here. I have a little 10-meter crystal-controlled beacon transmitter, and the way I got the Morse code into it was that Ralph Taggart, the guy who does all the great work on satellite weather satellite transmissions and reception from weather satellites, he had this really nice Morse program, and I had it. It came with one of the came with one of the ARRL handbooks, and I wanted to use it to generate beacon for use with my little transmitter, but it didn't have a beacon feature. So I emailed Ralph and I said, "Listen, how could I do this?" And he was kind enough to modify the software and send me back a custom version, which is now sitting on my on the hard drive of my old 486 computer off there in the corner. So if I think about getting back into beacon operation, my first thought is not to reach for a new cutting-edge pickaxe, as you are doing, but I'm thinking, how can I fire up that old 486? It's kind of bulky for the application. But, yeah, the pickaxe seems like the way to go. And QRSS just seems so interesting. It's so, it's very QRP relevant, too. And I always like the idea of a beacon that you could just sit there and let it run and have people email in reports from around the world. I've done that a few times from the Azores, from Virginia, and it's just great fun. Not at QRSS. I was at, high speed. I forget what's the opposite of QRS. I was at normal speed. I was transmitting probably about 13 words a minute or something like that. But yes, QRSS. And we got to point out, Mike, we got to make amends for last week where we created the impression that the QRSS community was somewhat intolerant of frequency deviation. Not true. You can have a signal that's varying by more than a few hertz, and they won't yell at you. KL7R, M0HBR.
Oh, yeah, so I need to correct that. they do yell at you, but it's all in good fun. It's It's like, oh, I see you drifted 3 hertz, old man, and then they'll point you to a nice site to where you can improve, and it's basically, you know, part of that facet of ham radio that part of the game is frequency control, and when you get in, they kind of Elmer you up to say, oh, well, now that you got that working, check this out, and that's what I meant by that. I got a gentle nudging. It wasn't mean email, and it was from a very nice fellow in VK, this is after he had received my 100 milliwatt signal across the briny blue Pacific from Alaska. So New Zealand picked me up really well, and Australia picked me up fairly well, and then the Midwest picked me up fairly well. Nobody in Europe picked me up at 100 milliwatts, but it's pretty cool stuff. And the guy in New Zealand was looking at my slow speed. At that time, I was running 3 second bits and 9 second DAWs. And he said, "Well, you know, you're not coming out of the noise as well as you could be. Why don't you go to 10 second bits and 30 second DAWs?" And he did, and he says, "Wow, you're full quieting now, basically easily picked up out of the noise." And one of the things about running a CW signal is that it's a single frequency. If you do something like some of the signals are sine waves and square waves and trapezoidal waves and that they'll put out. I think people might not notice a little drift during a single character if it was a sinusoid. I might try doing that. As far as keyers go, yeah, I've done the write your own code and key a serial port. I've done that. But I've been using K1EL. He sells the beacon chips, or ID or chips. I think he calls it the KID. And so I had him make me an ID or chip for, I think it was $9 shipped to Alaska, you know. So I was using that in my remote base. And I think I'll pull that chip out of my remote base and put it in my QRSS transmitter when I get it working. Anyway, the crew on the Knights KNIGHT QRSS group are a great bunch of guys, and I do apologize if I gave the wrong impression. I noticed you and another person came back and said, "Oh, it sounds interesting, but it sounds way too hard." That's not the case at all. The way you get the extreme frequency control is that you use sound card software there, Bill. I'll explain that next over. KL7R.
Yeah, I was thinking when you were saying that they don't actually yell at you, I was thinking, well, if they do, they yell at you very slowly. But it does sounds like a great project. It sounds sort of conjures up memories of the old frequency measuring test, which I see they're reviving, by the way. I was just saying that I was always thinking about taking the beacon transmitter, maybe with a little K1EL chip, either at QRSS or at regular speed, and combine it with a solar panel, and just set it up so that when the solar energy gets to a certain threshold, the transmitter and the beacon turns on, and be a kind of a sunlight driven operation. It'd be good for one of these Volkswagen solar panels that I've been playing around with. By the way, the Volkswagen solar panels give me they startle me every once in a while, because I have them. I use the suction cups that come with them, and I just slap them on the inside of the windows here in my London shack, and they're good for about 6 months or so. But then, from time to time, I'll be sitting up here quietly at 5 o'clock in the morning, drinking my first cup of coffee, and the suction cups will let go. It makes a hell of a noise. So. Excitement of using Volkswagen solar panels. But back to beacons and sound card software. Tell us about that, Mike. KL7R, M0HBR.
Oh, Roger. Well, you know, there is another. You said fast CW. There is a thing called HFCW, high speed CW, which is on the order of 2 kilohertz. It's kind of like that. It's like high speed, really high speed CW, and they take those K1EL gears or beacons or chips are capable of sending high speed CW, and guys will send repeatedly high speed CW up on 6 meters to bounce off of meteor trails, and then they'll hear a little burst, and then they'll bring it down into some sound card software or whatever, and slow it down to where they can decode the CW. So they'll get a little burst of basically what sounds like digital white noise, and it turns out it's actually really, really fast CW. As far as using the sound card for frequency control, if like on my Yaesu, 700 hertz is the offset for CW. So if you go to 10.000, which is WWV, and you go on CW, you'll hear a 700 hertz audio tone for WWV. And so you fire up some sound card software, and it'll tell you, oh, no, that's not 700 hertz, that's 703 hertz. So now you've just calibrated your receiver, and you know your 3 hertz reads off by 3 hertz. And then you can take that and run it up to 10.140 and then listen to the 700 hertz tone there and know you're exactly on 10.140. Anyway, it's not as hard as it sounds there. It's just using tools that you wouldn't think, Bill.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. Well, great. I don't think I'm going to get into the... I think I will just stick with regular speed CW for beacons if I get into it, or I would go to slow speed, the high-speed stuff. The meteor bursts, I've always been interested in that. But I don't... One of these days, that's one on the to-do list. The meteor scatter would be a lot of fun. I played a little bit with it in the Azores because there was a guy on... I was on San Miguel Island, which is in the eastern part of the chain, and there was a guy, a really good microwave experimenter, a few islands over, and we used to, I think we started working each other through the PC set, digipeater from the midshipman at Annapolis. This thing would come over and would digipete through the PC set and talk on 2 meters, keyboard to keyboard, and then. I decided it would be great fun to leave the beacon on and see if we could make some kind of automatic meteor trail QSOs, or at least burst the, you know, send the packets and have the packets bounce off the meteor trail. But I didn't have nearly enough power or antenna gain for that. It was fine to get into the little CubeSat, but not enough for meteor burst. But that'd be good. Hey, you talk about high speed burst. I'm going to date myself now, but I was in the Army long enough ago, and in the part of the Army that did this, that they actually used the burst CW, and I think it was even almost mechanical. You would send the message the good old fashioned way with a straight key, and I remember it going into this device, and then you'd hit this button, and it would out it would go. Kept you off the air. It kept your transmissions quite short, which was the whole idea. And I'm sure if the technology's moved on quite a bit since those days. Yeah, well, great, good news there on the QRSS front. But Mike, I got to tell you, it's Hamfest Day today. Billy and I are going to head west to the Campton Park Hamfest. They have this twice a year, once in the fall, once in the spring, and so out we go, ham-festing this morning. They don't start real early here. They start doors open at 10, so no need to get up at the crack of dawn. Things are much more civilized over here, you know. KL7R, M0HBR.
Oh, Roger. Well, cool. That'll be fun for the both of you guys. Well, keep your eyes open for some Hi-Z headsets. Those are getting hard to find, and I think Billy'd be about ready to build a passive AM receiver. And you need some Hi-Z headphones to do that. So cool stuff. So do they have like bangers and mash or bubble and squeak? What do they serve at a ham fest in England?
Yeah, I guess you could get that stuff. We never stick around long enough. It's a ham fest in England is, as you'd expect, remarkably similar to ham fests in the States. There are some differences. They do start a little bit later. At least this one does. But the same mixture of dealers and people doing kind of used equipment sales. I think most of the used equipment sales are organized by clubs, not too many individuals. It's stateside ham fest. You have out of the tailgate area. The one I go to doesn't have tailgate areas, but the clubs have tables, and the club members put their used stuff out there and they sell it. Obviously, there's a lot of silent key stuff being sold also. But it's always good fun. I always enjoy this ham fest, so off we go. It's relatively close by, and I know how to get there, which is two big advantages. It's at a racetrack, too, and there's a big area there with a kind of a big parking lot with some great slopes, so Billy brings along his skateboard, and he gets some skateboarding in on the after the ham fest. Talking about things British, Mike, I just wanted to point out to our listeners that there's a really nice ham radio magazine here in the UK. It's one of my favorites. There's been some recent discussion about the technical content of ham radio magazines on QRP.L. And I want to mention Practical Wireless, or PW as it's known here. It's got a very high amount of technical material in there, but it's not really cutting edge stuff. It's not getting into sort of traditional QEX territory. It's more at the level of the amateur who's interested in home brewing and interested in the circuits, but is not necessarily interested in working at the cutting edge of new technology. And I'm very pleased to report that for the last few issues, they've been running stories on double sideband rigs. And they have a columnist has been running a very nice column on a double sideband rig of his own design. And yeah, it's Tony Naylor, a G4CFY, in the November issue had a double sideband rig that he's been designing and doing it, I think, as part of a series. And this month, the December issue, has the PW Breen, a simple transceiver using double sideband suppressed carrier, described by Tim Wolford, G3PCJ. And it's really it's an interesting and very nice-looking rig. I think they have it available as a kit, as I flip through Practical Wireless here, but it's all built on one little board. Uses any 602 chips and a lot of MOSFETs, but they have versions of it for 80 and 20. And kits for the Breen transceiver are available from Wolford Electronics. You can get the complete 80 meter version for £44, which is I guess about $80. Not bad. And then they've got a mini mixer kit for 7, 10, or 14 megahertz. That's an additional £14, and crystals are £2 each. It really looks neat. It's a neat little board. Everything fits in there really nicely and puts out about 1.5 watts. So I'm very pleased that double sideband is becoming socially acceptable over here. A couple of years, I think I mentioned this, a year or two ago when I first mentioned my double sideband project on 40 meters, I got some not angry email. I got some expressions of concern that I was going to be putting a double, big, powerful, double wide signal on the spectrum here. But it looks like double sideband is getting some attention here. And I want to put in a plug for Practical Wireless. It's a very, very nice magazine. George Dobbs of the GQRP Club has a regular column in it. It's really great, and I always enjoy his column. And there's a lot of other really good stuff in there in every issue. KL7R, M0HBR.
All right, Bill. That's great to hear. And I don't think I've ever seen a Practical Wireless magazine unless it's out there on the net. I may have stumbled across it there. I just subscribed to ARRL again, the second time in the past 4 years, 3 years. I got the Homebrewer magazine when it was out, and then the other QRP Quarterly. I get that. So basically QRP Quarterly and Ham Radio Magazine, or not Ham Radio, but 73 Minute. Man, QST Magazine. 73 Magazine, that's been a while, eh, Bill?
Yeah. I used to love 73 Magazine. You used to have to kind of, I guess, disregard some of the wackier stuff, especially on the editorial pages there towards the end. But I always liked it because, obviously they were just taking ideas from hams and just putting them in there. You had to be real careful about some of the circuits there. And there wasn't a whole lot of lab testing going on, but there was some great articles and great circuits, and every magazine was filled with these great ideas. I got one of the ideas from one of my favorite antennas that I ever built was called the Ray Gun. It was this really cool satellite antenna, and imagine a five element 2 meter cubical quad made out of refrigerator tubing, and then inside this quad, inside it, along the axis of the quad, a helix antenna for 70 centimeters. So you had two antennas, kind of basically a 2 meter five element quad wrapped around a 70 centimeter helix. Obviously, one being used, the helix being used for transmit, the quad being used for receive, with some of the high orbit satellites. And I built this thing out of scrap lumber and refrigerator tubing in the Dominican Republic, and put it up on my roof. I didn't have any kind of altitude control, so I just kept it elevated about 45 degrees above the horizon, and then spun it around with a TV rotor. I got a picture. I have pictures of this thing on my website. If you go to the satellite communications section, it looked really great. It looked like the death ray up there on your roof. I'm sure it had all the neighbors suspecting that it was some sort of strange U.S. government project, but it wasn't. It was just my own demented radio fiend activity. But that came from the pages of 73, and I'll be eternally grateful for them. To them for that kind of project. The ray gun might not have made it into QST. And I'm not sure about the technical specs of it, but it was great fun to build, and I used at least a 2 meter portion of it to talk to Norm Thagard on the Mir space station, and it was great. It worked like a charm. So thanks to 73 for that. Yeah, but you mentioned your QST and PW, I guess the magazines. Sprat, of course, is important. So anyway, DSB is making the pages of the UK magazines. Let's see, what else I wanted to mention. In the computer area, we were talking about all things digital there for a while. I'm involved in an effort to get my old Toshiba 400CS laptop revived. The hard disk drive died. I got a new one. I put it in there. Now I'm thinking about how I'm going to get an operating system into it. And I made some purchases. Well, I made a software purchase here on eBay. We'll see if that works out. I would love to get that thing going. It had this great sound system in it. And I just know it would be useful for something. And so we're going to, it's got a, you know, the processor's really slow, but you could do things with it. It could be useful, so I'm working on that. That's my one of my digital projects for the week. The other I'm happy to report is that I have the wireless range extender working, Mike. This device, I don't want to talk bad about it because I got it working now, but it wasn't easy. None of this stuff is plug and play. I don't know how people who are not technically inclined ever get any of this stuff going, because I consider myself fairly, well, my grandmother said that I was electrically inclined. She spotted this when I was 7 years old. And in spite of that, I still have great difficulty getting some of this stuff running. The wireless range extender was particularly difficult, but I got it going now. So I have a little, I have a little 2.4 gigahertz repeater blinking away down in the living room, and I just think it's cool. I just like to look over it every once in a while and see that little LED flashing, knowing that it's doing encrypted repeating of my wife's laptop from down in the kitchen. Great stuff. KL7R, M0HBR.
All right, Bill, KL7R back. Well, as far as 73, my two favorite things out of 73 magazine was they had this modem for TRS-80 computers. And it was a wireless modem, I think. And it did 300 baud. And he said, if 300 baud isn't fast enough, you might as well install a wideband laser link. And I always remember the phrase, install a wideband laser link, as just being a very cool thing. And the other thing is that in 73 magazine, they had a 567 phase lock tone decoder. It's like a 555, only it's a 567 in it. You give it a tone like 700 hertz out of your speaker for a CW note, and it'll key an LED or flip a bit on a serial port, and so that used to be my test of every new computer I got, is I would put a 567 to decode the tones coming out of a speaker, and then use that to write a little basic program to write Morse code on the screen. Anyway, good stuff out of 73. Fine on your repeater. One thing you may not realize is that the bottom six channels of 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi are in the ham band. And if you don't encrypt the data, if you run clear text data, you can run a kilowatt on channel one of Wi-Fi. Probably not wise, being a kilowatt might cook your corneas, but it's I think it's legal. Anyway, it's something to think about there, Bill, and plan on getting your repeater working. Building the power supply, I built that KV1JV current limited power supply, and it's got variable current limits and variable voltage adjust. I'm using an old Dell laptop power supply as my 20 volt source, so I can go 0 to 20 volts and 0 to 2.5 amps and short the output and right to ground, and it just goes to 2.5 amps. I don't get flames, and this is goodness. I might save some circuitry there. It was actually a bit of a learning experience. I used one of these great big, 2N3055, only it was a PNP, monster pass transistor. And I learned a little bit about base current, fiddling with that thing. I burnt up some 1K resistors. I would have never thought that would have been possible, base current, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, well, it sounds good. Yeah, those are the kind of learning experiences that stick with you, especially when you put your finger on it right as it's burning. Ooh, man. I just recently burned up some emitter resistors on this little Class A amplifier that I've been playing with. And I had a whole lot of current going through there, too much for the little quarter-watt resistor I had in there. So I had to come up with a series parallel combination for the same resistance value that sort of spread the dissipation over four different resistors. And my main problem was that it wasn't so much that the design, the current was that much. It's just that I managed to burn out the 2N2222 that I was using. And once that went, it just basically shorted VCC to ground through this poor little quarter watt resistor, and well, it gave the familiar smoke emission. The smoke was let out of the component, Mike, and you know how difficult it is to get it back in. So anyway, yeah, it is a learning experience. I've been having some real learning experiences here also with the help of some of our very technically capable correspondents, and I've been looking at the issue of saturation efficiency and in Class C amplifiers. Like I said, I mentioned a few weeks ago, I think, that I was reading David B. Rutledge's excellent Electronics of Radio book. Dave is at Caltech and used the NorCal 40 transceiver as part of his course, and this book is basically the textbook about all the electronics behind the NorCal 40. And I was going through the chapters on amplifiers, and he was describing the various modes, you know, Class A, Class AB, Class C, and then the more exotic modes. And it got me thinking about the issue of saturation with Class C amps. And do you, we know that with a Class C amp, most of the time, it's in cutoff, so you don't have any real idle current going through there, because until the input signal rises up above, you know, 0.6 or 0.7 volts on the base, the transistor's in cutoff. It's not conducting, so it's not sitting there, you know, generating, dissipating power and generating heat. But then the other question is, how hard do you drive it? Do you drive it so much that once it does conduct, that it goes all the way into saturation and goes really hard on, and you know, takes the voltage from collector to emitter down close to zero. And well, the conclusion that I've come to after getting a lot of help from people on Usenet groups and an email is that sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. And one of the reasons that you would, probably the main reason that you would drive or configure the amplifier for saturation on peaks is that you get tremendous efficiency gains. And it's a little Ohm's law thing that I had never really thought about, but when you saturate a transistor, that is when you drive it to the point where the current through the transistor is so great that the load drops the voltage on the collector down to zero or down to the value that you have on the emitter. In other words, it's getting pretty much close to, the voltage is dropping down. You have a lot of current going through the thing, but the voltage is so low that the amount of power that actually being dissipated in the transistor, it drops dramatically. And, you know, you can see this on LTSpice. I set up a little, on LTSpice, set up a little Class C amplifier. And then I used the thermocouple that we were talking about last week and did a trace on I put the thermocouple on the transistor itself, and I put the thermocouple on the load. And then I just experimented and played with the level of drive going into the stage, and watched essentially dissipation in the transistor and in the load. And when you're short, when you're below saturation, you know, quite a bit of power is being dissipated by the transistor, and the efficiency is not great. Man, once you drive that thing into saturation, you actually can see a dip in the amount of power being dissipated in the transistor, and a huge increase relatively in the amount being dissipated in the load. So this is one of those things where you know, I started reading the book and it got my head scratching, and then I started talking to people on the Usenet groups and on email about it, and then used LT Spice to kind of solidify my understanding of what's going on there and why you would saturate. But anyway, I think it's back to linear modes for me, because I'm mostly interested in phone. KL7R, M0HBR.
KL7R back. It'd be interesting to find out, like pulse width modulate the square wave. People do that for power. I don't see why you couldn't do it for voice. I haven't seen anything written up about it, but seems like you could pulse width modulate a square wave to get a synthesized sine wave. I don't know if you get AM out or if you get DSB out or if it depends on the mixer you're using, whether you get DSB, but seems like you could pulse width modulate a square wave. Anyway, cool experiment and cool thought about using the power there through the transistor and reading it in Spice there. I wonder if you saw increased harmonic content when you started flat topping really hard. I just happened to be thinking about 73 magazine, and I remembered Wayne Green, and so I just Googled Wayne Green, thinking he might be dead. And it turns out there's a WayneGreen.com, and there's a picture of somebody on the cover there that looks a lot like Hunter S. Thompson. I thought I'd pass it on, Bill. Anyway, square wave harmonic content, M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, it's well, pulse width modulation is, I know they're using it for on AM. I'm not sure whether they're pulse width modulating square waves or whether they clean it up first and then use the pulse width modulation to modulate kind of a cleaned up sine wave signal. I'm not sure about that, but I know that pulse width modulation is one of the more advanced techniques. So I guess it's become pretty standard with AM transmitters in the commercial field, and I think some of the amateur guys are doing it. Although I think most AM guys are more in the DX100, big mod transformer, mod iron kind of mode, and pulse width modulation. I might be a little bit techie for the traditionalists in that field. I always love the sound of those big old boat anchor DX100s and Rangers and Vikings and kilowatt desk amps and all that great stuff. I've had some good fun with the Class C amps, and thanks to everybody who have sent in suggestions and tried to get me on the right track. Mike, we're approaching the 50-minute point. So I think it's time for Solder Smoke Mailbag, don't you think?
Oh, Roger, Bill. Go for it there if you've got it organized. I would like to mention that Jeff contacted us and gave me a phone call. He's a really, really interesting fellow. I'm kind of looking forward to maybe visiting more with him there. But go ahead with the mailbag there, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
Wow, I just wrapped it with the microphone. I meant to do it with the pen, but Solder Smoke Mailbag for edition number 39. We've already mentioned the great email that we've got from Dez, M0AYF. Thanks to you, Dez. Glad to hear that we're helping you have an alternative to EastEnders and Coronation Street. Our U.S. listeners won't know what that means, but these are the big TV soaps here that Dez's XYL watches, and I think he has the earbuds in with Solder Smoke on the MP3 player during the presentation of these Well, I'm sure they're fine programs, but good, Des. Glad to hear we're helping you out with that, and thanks for helping us with the pickaxes and the slow speed CW. We got a very nice and interesting email from Steve at G0FUW in Bath here in England, and he talks about the BitX 20 project. And in Bath and in southwest England, they have a radio class effort going on, and they've built 10 BitX 20s out there, and they've got an anglicized version of the BitX 20, and it's going to be featured in a new book from the Radio Society of Great Britain. The working title is Building HF Transceivers, A Practical Guide. This thing should be out. I think it's going, the book is in final, and it should be coming out pretty soon. So that'll be really interesting, and glad to see that a new book with the BitX 20 is coming out. And really, really impressed to hear that that so many of these kits are being built down there in the Bath area in southwest England. They've come up with some innovations on which coils to use. They're using T50 Amidon toroids in place of the tap washers that I think Farhan had in the original design. And Steve sent a picture. He's got a really beautiful BitX 20, very nicely packaged with a nice digital readout, and his is putting out 3 to 4 watts to a cobweb antenna. And he listens to the Solder Smoke while traveling on trains here through the UK. So thanks very much for that, Steve, and we look forward to the book. Another UK message, we got a message from Bill, a G4KKI in Manchester, and he says that he's really enjoyed Solder Smoke 80 and our discussions of DSB transmitters have caused him to pull out a DSB kit that he picked up. It was sold apparently back in the early 80s, called a DSB-80. It uses an SBL1 double balance mixer. Quite simple, and anyway, he's dug that out, and he also reports that sometimes he gets better reports on DSB than on CW. So he's thinking about doing a similar rig on 20 meters. Thanks to you, Bill. Thanks for that. And then let's see. Ah, yes, you mentioned the guy who's been sending us a lot of mail, Jeff. Jeff Dam has sent in a lot, and Jeff is, for those of you who don't know, Jeff is, I guess, one of the heroes of solid-state design for the radio amateur. If you go and look through that book, you'll find Jeff in the acknowledgments, and you'll find his handiwork all throughout the book. And we're really glad to have Jeff as a listener, and I want to thank Jeff for helping me out with my efforts to understand the theory. It's great to get an email from him, and I know we're going to try to get him on the show here if we can get the technology together. And there's just so much we can talk to. I think if when we do get Jeff on the show, it's going to have to be a series, because there's no way we could cover all of the topics that he's commented on in one issue. So I think we can look forward to a series with Jeff. And his call is WA7MLH. I'm sure that'll ring bells with readers of Solid State Design, because, like I said, his work is appears throughout the book. We got a fun email here, really, from WJ2V, Preston J. Douglas, writing from Long Island. He listens to Solder Smoke on an MP3 player while traveling on the Long Island Railroad, and he commented on First Light, a book that we mentioned a while back by Richard Preston. And WJ2V mentions that he is a friend of Richard Preston's brother, Douglas J. Preston, and WJ2V's name is Preston J. Douglas. And he mentions that that he jokes with the other fellow that they it's kind of an anti-matter thing, and they should avoid shaking hands because it might generate annihilating energy there. So careful with that, Preston, and thanks for the email. And that concludes this week's Solder Smoke mailbag. It's So, Mike, it's going to be time to get ready for the ham fest in a little while. I'm looking at my list here. I think we've covered quite a bit. Some disturbing emails on QRPL about changes in the chemical composition of superglue, a matter of concern to Manhattan-style builders everywhere. I mean, we might have to take this up in a future episode. Back to you, KL7R, M0HBR.
I haven't seen that. I'll have to read the QRPL. I haven't listened to Rec Radio Homebrew in some time, so I'll have to go and catch up over there. But hey, I'm sorry about the crashes, Bill. I don't know what's going on my end. If you can figure a way to edit them out, that'd be cool. It seems to happen in Echolink on certain types of voice peaks, and I'll just lock up tight and have to reboot. I don't know what the deal is, but anyway. Good talking to you again. I'm kind of glad we were able to get one out completely this time. It's been kind of challenging here. Been doing a lot of work on the side, and to actually have built something is a bit of progress there. Anyway, have fun at the Ham Fest, and make sure Billy wears a helmet there. M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, at least for the skateboarding portion. we'll keep an eye out for Hi-Z headphones. We have some here. We have some germanium diodes en route. We have some Galena in stock, so we might get a crystal radio out of this here in the weeks ahead. All right, 7-3s to you, Mike, and 7-3s to all the Solder Smoke listeners. Thanks for your feedback. We really like to get your mail. Oh, wait, I thought he was going to miss the show, but here he is. Billy just woke up. Good morning, Billy. So time for us to have breakfast and get ready for the Ham Fest. Yeah, keep those cards and letters coming in. Really great, and we really like to get emails. Send it to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So 7-3s all around, and thanks, Mike, and we'll talk to you again next week. KL7R, M0HBR, 7-3.